It takes a big movie studio to make the Avengers, but it doesn't necessarily take a big movie studio to write a piece of Avengers fan fiction. You see big content companies largely recognizing that fan activities are really good for them because they engage people.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Rebecca Tushnet. She's a law professor at Georgetown, and she's also a major player in the Organization for Transformative Works, a nonprofit that looks at copyright and its application to things like fair use and fan fiction. Rebecca, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
What is fan fiction?
So at its core, fan fiction is taking a text, and these days it's usually a copyrighted text, and it could be a book or a movie or a TV show, and saying, well, what happened next? Or what if the main character was a woman instead of a man? It's part of human nature, I think, to tell the stories and retell the stories. Our myths, the Odyssey, the stories of Coyote, they're all what fan fiction was before there was copyright. People told and retold the stories.
So it is an old impulse, but now, because of digital technology, individual users can mirror perfectly the production quality, in many cases, of major studios or producers, and there's copyright.
So there are technological changes that make accessibility suddenly possible sort of across the world. So someone who retells Harry Potter in Mumbai can actually have that rendition recognized elsewhere. And that also implicates copyright, which does now cover a wide variety of things, and it's automatic and it lasts for a very long time.
Yeah, explain that. Copyright is in the Constitution.
Well, so there actually was no copyright law. The Constitution authorizes Congress to pass such a law, which it pretty quickly did. And it provided a 14-year term, renewable for another 14 years if the author survived, and it covered books, maps, and charts. So given how broad copyright is now, it's now possible to say fan fiction, at least some fan fiction, is an infringing derivative work of the original. And in order to deal with that, because I do think it's a legitimate human activity, and especially in its non-commercial aspect, is something really worth protecting, we now talk about fair use, which is a principle that allows people to make fair, limited uses of existing works without permission from the copyright owner.
If I want to do a fan fiction of 50 Shades of Grey, what constitutes fair use where I could get away with it?
Well, so the traditional factors include things like whether the work is commercial or non-commercial. So non-commercial works are just much more likely to be fair uses, in part because by their very non-commerciality, they show that they're not something that a market would support. So it doesn't necessarily make sense to charge for them or require compensation for them since they're just non-market activities. The nature of the use, so whether it's transformative, whether it adds something new, a new meaning or message, and that can be straight up criticism, but it can also actually be in the form of literary changes. Then courts also ask, how much did you take of the original? So if you took a little and built a lot, that's going to favor fair use. What kind of work did you copy? So if you copied an unpublished work, that's going to be less likely to be fair than copying a work that's already been fabulously successful and is easily the original is easily accessible and they've got a lot of return for their money already.
Are producers of content, are they just, is it over for them because of technology and because of a shift in power where readers and consumers now, it's so easy to create your own. And in many ways, the authors and producers seem to be insisting on a particular interpretation of their work, and it's like people are done with that. We want to make our own decisions about stuff.
I'd say instead, there's just a bigger spectrum. So we have the multi-million dollar Avengers, right? So it takes a big movie studio to make the Avengers, and I loved the Avengers, but it doesn't necessarily take a big movie studio to write a piece of Avengers fan fiction. And it turns out that these can all thrive together. You see big content companies largely recognizing that fan activities, as opposed to commercial copying without permission, are really good for them because they engage people.
Talk about the Organization for Transformative Works. It's a nonprofit. What are your goals and what are your kind of action items?
So fandom is huge and much older than we are. basically a group of people that I was a part of decided that it would be a good idea to have as part of Fandom a nonprofit with the protections afforded by U.S. law for nonprofits, the ability to organize, the ability to, you know, make educational presentations, and also to go, for example, testify in front of the Copyright Office, and try and actually be a home for people when they got one of the few lightning strike challenges. Because, you know, most producers do recognize that this is fine, but you get the sort of occasional random strikes against particular pieces, sometimes because of what they say being offensive to the copyright owner.
So this is the classic case of where if you do, you know, a Star Trek piece that somehow is unflattering to a character, you might
right.
be more likely to get in trouble than if it's just the kind of run-of-the-mill story.
Right.
There seems to be a very serious mismatch between what people can do and what the law is talking about. Do you see within the next 5 years or 10 years a place where we reach an equilibrium, or is this just going to be a constant kind of struggle?
So one thing I've learned is that predicting what's going to happen in 5 years is a terrible idea. One thing that I think may be true is that the best ideas are not coming from America anymore, in part because our legislative process is just completely gridlocked. There are good proposals out there, but I don't see the U.S. adopting.
Can you talk about an idea from outside the U.S.
that seems promising?
So
Canada is just finishing up around a copyright reform. It does have some really disappointing digital lock provisions. That we actually urged on them.
Right. And so this is kind of like the DMCA or
exactly.
Digital Millennium Copyright Act prohibitions on breaking encryption,
right.
on
ripping
media
DVDs
and
things like that. But on the other hand, Canada has much more robust protections for different kinds of personal uses and has recognized things like, you know, educational copying and even copying for research, where ultimately you're going to use that research to go out in the commercial world and make some money. But it's still research. It still produces a social benefit. So that's I think we can do better, and we can do better, in fact, just by practices. We don't have to be the kind of litigation happy, like, I will always assert my rights because I want to intimidate you culture that we sometimes come close to having.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Rebecca Tushnet of Georgetown Law School and the Organization for Transformative Works. Thanks very much. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillette.